We'll get into some more issues here about all things happening in our state and laws that impact you, and also some of the legal aspects of things, too. Ben Zielinski joins us now, great State House reporter at Capital News, Illinois. Hello, Ben. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm good.
Thanks for joining us today. A little run-through of a few different stories. I wanted to start with public defender reform. This is something that a lot of people have been fighting for a long time. Maybe set this story up for us. What is the issue with some of the public defender offices across our state?
Yeah, it's really almost every public defender office, actually. They are all pretty severely understaffed. You know, I've heard from some public defenders, especially downstate, where they may have an attorney on their staff that's handling 500 cases in a courtroom at one time, basically. Yeah, it's pretty extreme, the lack of resources public defenders in Illinois have. And one reason for that is because the state doesn't really provide any direct resources to these offices. So what state lawmakers want to do is they want to fix that problem, because most other states are funding their public defenders. And the proposal that's up in Springfield, it would create a statewide public defender office with the idea that in the long term, there's going to be more resources and more state funding going to public defenders than just about half of Illinois counties.
So then if the state doesn't do it, is it just it's county by county right now? They fund their own defender's office?
Yes, for the most part, it's under county budgets. Now, Cook County is a little different. There's a lot more resources, obviously, in Cook County. They have, you know, some resource problems. They could always use more.
Right.
But this really applies mostly outside of Cook County. And the legislation up would really only apply to counties with more than 35,000 people, which is actually only about half of Illinois' 102 counties. The other smaller counties, they have contract agreements with attorneys. So that's kind of probably a later on issue that lawmakers will tackle in the years to come.
I'm not putting you on the spot here, Ben, and if you don't have an exact number, I would not fault you at all. But I imagine a lot of people use public defenders, right? I mean, we have a lot of lawyers on our shows, and I know our listeners, many of them have used lawyers in the past, but there are a lot of people in the state that use a public defender because they simply cannot afford to hire a lawyer.
Yeah, I don't have the number either, but I would be curious to know what that figure is, because, you know, a criminal defense is a constitutional right in this country. So everybody who goes up for any sort of criminal charge needs an attorney. But in so many cases, I mean, an attorney is so expensive for a lot of people. So they naturally default to public defenders. And a lot of people who do end up on criminal charges, they often aren't the wealthiest people in the world either. So, yeah, public defenders play a very important role.
And I do think that the county by county system, I mean, I guess your defense and the strength of your defense, or at least the strength of the person or people who are defending you, shouldn't be based on which county you get arrested in. And again, I'm not trying to provide so much sympathy to people that do bad things, but defense is a pillar of what our constitutional system is all about. And yeah, if you're in rural Illinois, you shouldn't get less of a defense than someone in Cook County.
Exactly. And that's kind of what lawmakers are getting at here, is that it's not just the attorneys on staff, but it's investigators and other people who handle some of that behind the scenes stuff in the legal system on the defense side of the criminal justice process. And those positions are really lacking, especially in some of these counties outside of Cook County. So, you know, you don't get a proper legal defense just because you have an attorney if the attorney also doesn't have the necessary people to support them behind the scenes.
What about the Pretrial Fairness Act, where it basically leaves it up to a judge and they decide whether you're in or out, whether it's cash bail or not? Has that made the public defender issue harder or easier?
It certainly seems like it's made it harder, because just the speed of trials now is so much faster. You know, under the previous bond system, you know, you didn't necessarily need an attorney when you had your bond set. The judge could just do that, and, you know, the attorney wasn't going to do a whole lot for you in that case. But now under this system, your defense attorney is very critical, because that first hearing that will decide if you get released before your trial or not includes evidence. It includes statements from witnesses, victims, and it's basically almost a mini trial in a lot of ways. So you really need a prepared defense attorney if you're going up in front of a judge for a pretrial detention hearing, which happens within 72 hours of an arrest.
Part of this legislation, based on your reporting, and we're chatting with Ben Zielinski, who does a great work as a State House reporter at Capital News Illinois, is not just the funding of the Defender's Office, but kind of how defense attorneys are chosen for people, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this was actually kind of something I learned that was really interesting, is that the chief judge in many cases in Illinois is the one who actually picks the chief public defender in most counties. Cook County has a little bit of a different system, so they're not necessarily going to be impacted by the reform lawmakers are pushing. But what lawmakers want to do is they kind of want to take the chief judge's power away a little bit, where the judge would just be part of a local panel that would select and vet candidates for public defender positions, instead of the sole person who really decides who is going to be the chief public defender, which kind of, you know, creates a little bit of a conflict of interest, lawmakers think.
Oh, so it's the chief judge in many counties picks who are the public defenders, and this legislation would aim to change how that's done, putting that person as part of a committee, which could also relieve them of some of that responsibility from having to do so. But as you're, I think, alluding to as well, if you're picking who the public defenders are, that gives you maybe what some people would say an outsized role in what happens in your courtrooms.
Exactly. And that's kind of one of the things that advocates are talking about is, you know, it can be a bit of an awkward situation for somebody who's being represented by a public defender, because, you know, this isn't the ethical way it would happen, but there could be just that thought that, gee, my defense attorney, his boss, is essentially the chief judge. So, you know, do I know that I'm getting an adequate defense? Because how do I know that my attorney is not just trying to please the judge, because the judge has the power over the attorney for their employment?
Interesting. All right, where's this bill at? Where are we at with this thing?
Yeah, this has passed the House already, so now it goes to the Senate, which is actually a very positive sign that this can move forward, because in the last several years, the Senate president has actually been the one who's been pushing this reform, but it's kind of been the House that's been a little bit reluctant to take up the proposal coming over from the Senate. So the fact that this is being considered by the Senate now, I think, is a pretty good sign that something is going to pass in the next couple weeks.
Did it pass mostly on party lines?
Yeah, it was kind of a mixed kind of vote. I think a lot of downstate lawmakers also recognize those need that, you know, their counties and Republican districts are also some of the counties that need the help from this office the most.
Yeah, I mean, what were the objections to it? Just the cost of it all and the fact that the state doesn't have, a bunch of money to give out.
Exactly. Cost and just kind of some of the logistics. A lot of lawmakers didn't feel like the bill is ready to go yet. So we'll see kind of how the Senate takes it up. I expect that there might be more bipartisan support on the Senate side.
For sure. Ben, before we get to the other two stories I wanted to mention, if people don't know what Capital News Illinois is, it's a nonprofit newsroom, right?
Yes, exactly. We are completely funded by grants.
Grants, and do you have subscribers too, or is it all grant-funded?
All grant-funded. Any subscribers we do have to our content, it's completely free.
Oh, that's great news. That's why I was able to click on all the stories and see it. Shout out to exactly what you all do. I work in nonprofit news as well at Block Club Chicago, which gets a lot of grants, but we rely on subscribers too. And all nonprofit newsrooms deserve some support, including the Daily Line, which I know you worked at beforehand. All right, I'll get off that soapbox right now, Ben. The regional transit issue is huge. This is kind of, I don't know, is this the biggest story of what's making its way through the legislature right now?
I think so. In terms of policy, I mean, this really impacts the vast majority of Illinoisans. Certainly everybody in the Chicago area is going to be impacted by public transportation reform, and or especially impacted if lawmakers don't take up public transportation reform.
Let's set it up. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so basically all of our public transportation agencies in the Chicago area, they collectively are facing a $771 million funding shortfall beginning in 2026. And this is only going to grow year after year without new funding mechanisms. And the main reason for this is really federal COVID money is expiring in 2026. This was approved and sent on to local governments by Congress with an expiration date that's coming up very shortly. So now that's kind of leaving, though, all these agencies with a big hole, because they used a lot of this money to, you know, fund these gaps when the pandemic hit and be able to keep service up to the levels they currently are at now. And basically, if, you know, this cliff is allowed to pass without any sort of new funding to close the gap, a lot of these agencies are going to have to make some very dramatic cuts of services. The CTA, for example, has said that they could end up eliminating 40% of all service that they provide right now.
I think that what makes this confusing for people to rally behind on one side or the other is it's just a strange apparatus. Can you, as best you can, explain like RTA versus Metra versus CTA and kind of this relationship that they all have, share, or don't?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they don't share a relationship, and that's part of the problem here. So the RTA is kind of this regional oversight that kind of directs some of the funding, the grant money, you know, some of these projects like the 95th Street Red Line stop and coordinating that with other transit agencies, but it's not very effective in the way it does its business. And it's really actually handcuffed a little bit by state law in terms of how much it's able to oversee all of these systems, MetroPACE and the CTA. So that's kind of the issue lawmakers are getting at here with reform. It's not just going to be plugging this hole. They want to see serious reform that will more than likely make the RTA stronger to set a universal fare system so you're not getting off of Metra and getting off of CTA using two different passes, for example. And that would be kind of one way that they would basically be trying to make a more cohesive regional public transportation system that might be a little bit more cost effective and hopefully serve the riders of the Chicago area better.
Yeah, it just seems like redundant leadership. I'm sure there's value in it, but like the RTA can't tell the CTA what to do, right?
Pretty much. And that's one of the issues is, you know, obviously both riders and public officials in the state are very unhappy with the CTA lately. And so one of the things that they're trying to get at here is maybe the RTA should be able to tell the CTA more of what they need to do, more of how they coordinate their schedule so you're not standing at a bus stop for 20 minutes after you get off, you know, your Metro train coming in on the north side, for example. So that's kind of, I guess, one way that they're trying to make the RTA stronger to improve the coordination so that service is more effective and runs better, because right now it's a bit of a free-for-all. Even though all the agency leaders say they talk to each other, in a lot of ways you just don't see how that actually is happening.
Yeah, there's a lot here. So what are lawmakers saying? Is they saying, we'll plug this budget hole for you, but you have to do it our way. You have to restructure how you operate in order to get this money. Is that essentially the carrot and the stick?
Yeah, and how that's going to happen is still kind of unclear, but the message from the governor down to virtually every lawmaker is there's going to be no funding without reforms. And the reforms are still a little bit up in the air, but right now the word on the street here in Springfield is the way that this is going to go is all these agencies are going to be allowed to remain by themselves, but the RTA is going to get stronger to be able to oversee more of the regional transportation network. And then at that point, once those kind of reforms are made, then we'll be able to talk about the funding structure. But the funding is still probably the number one unanswered question at the moment.
I imagine some lawmakers would say that's not far enough to still have a CTA board. Metro probably has a board or regional directors. I don't know how it all works, or PACE does as well. And then RTA on top of it. I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of people needed to operate these things. I'm not saying that they can just Doge cut everything to make it work, Ben, but I imagine some lawmakers are saying that's not enough.
No, and public safety is the other big thing that lawmakers say really needs to be addressed. I mean, we've heard so many CTA employees have come through and said they don't feel safe on their buses, on their trains. We've heard that from riders too, that they're standing on the platform late at night by themselves and they feel very unsafe in that position. And a lot of folks are pointing to other cities, especially New York, Washington, D.C., where you see police officers, law enforcement, they're on the train platform basically at every station at all times. And, you know, they think that might help people feel safer. You need people to ride the system, too, to be able to fund it. And if people are feeling unsafe on public transportation, they're not going to ride it, and that's going to exacerbate these funding issues.
What's the deadline for making this all work or not?
Depends who you ask. If you ask the transit agencies, they'll tell you it needs to be done by the end of this month. The reality is their budgets, each of them, they generally have their budgets come up towards the end of the year for the following year. So lawmakers don't think they need to do this right now. They would certainly like to get at least something done in the next few weeks before the General Assembly adjourns at the end of May. But the deadline is really more the fall, before December 1st, probably, when a lot of budgets are due for the public transit agencies. So they have some certainty going into 2026.
It's not your job, Ben, to look into the crystal ball. 0 to 100% chance this gets done before the end of the month.
I would say maybe 60% right now, that at least something gets done. And I don't know if it'll be the full thing, but something is probably going to pass, I think.
All right, Ben, you're going to hang on with us for just one more story. We're going to do it after the news with Sylvia Snowden. By the way, CapitalNewsIllinois.com is where you can find all this great stuff. People are always like, I got to know more about what's happening in the state legislature. CapitalNewsIllinois.com, one of the many great news outlets that cover the state, and they really dive in deep. Ben Zielinski joining us now from Capital News Illinois. And Ben, we're going to talk about the other story in a moment, but we were just talking about the transit and the RTA. Did you hear the first commercial that ran after the news, Ben? Or were you, because it was the RTA commercial trying to get people to call their legislators to fix their funding issue. And that PR campaign has actually made some lawmakers upset, right? Oh, I can't hear Ben. We'll find out what's happening there. Original. Hop off the line and hop back in. I didn't know if he was just taking a dramatic pause or not. Hey, Ben, you hear me now?
Yes, we're all good now.
Did you have the phone muted?
Yes.
I've done that. We've all done it. I figured that was the case. That's all good. So, yeah, my question was, you heard the ad, and that has riled some lawmakers, the ad itself.
Yes, it was a very expensive ad. I think $700,000 worth, actually.
Not that 130 seconds for WGN, I just want to point out. It was a whole PR campaign.
Exactly. So you've probably seen that on TV as well. A lot of lawmakers are like, gee, how can you afford such a expensive advertising campaign when you're facing a financial shortfall? Maybe we should rearrange some funds a little bit. So yeah, that's ruffled a lot of feathers in Springfield.
All right. Let's move on to this story that is right in Let's Get Legal's wheelhouse, just like the public defender one. A rare shoot down of some Democrat-sponsored bills in the U.S. House. This one has to do with people that were incarcerated for crimes they committed when they were under the age of 21, making them eligible for release. Set it up for us, Ben.
Yeah, so state lawmakers here on this bill, this would have been a pretty dramatic expansion of who is eligible for achieving release at some point during their prison sentence. So this applies to anyone who was sentenced for a crime under the age of 21, that after 10 years, they would be eligible for potentially to get a release hearing to be released from prison within serving 10 years of their sentence.
For any crime, Ben? Or
for any crime. Now, if they were convicted and sentenced for murder, they would be eligible for one of these release hearings after 20 years, 30 years, if the person that they murdered was also a child. So it's very controversial because, obviously, you know, really, if you were under age 21 and you were sentenced to a decade or more in prison, it was going to be a pretty heinous crime. It was more than likely a murder or a very serious sexual assault conviction. So that's really where the controversy comes from. But this would, you know, the argument that Democrat lawmakers who supported this bill were making is that essentially these were youth offenders. They have the ability to be rehabilitated. And, you know, they should get a fair shot to be able to be released from prison at some point within their lifetime.
What I find interesting is this 21. Why choose 21 and not 18? Why not line it up with the number that we, in theory, use to say you're charged as an adult or not? I imagine that's where some people were maybe rubbed the wrong way.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, if you're 18, 19, even 20 years old, and, you know, you commit one of these crimes and you're sentenced for it, I mean, there's a good argument that you're an adult. You should know better. You know, you're a developed human being to know that murder is wrong. So that's, I think, part of the issue here. You know, why 21 was chosen, it's not exactly clear. But a few years ago, lawmakers did pass legislation that would basically allow some people who were convicted of crimes before they turned 21, if they had served 40 years in prison, they are currently under state law eligible to get a hearing to be released from prison, but only applies to people who were sentenced after the middle of 2019. So the bill that was debated in Springfield last month, this would apply to basically anyone at any time who was sentenced, not just those who were sentenced in the last 6 years.
So the one in 2019 said if you served 40 years, you are eligible for at least a hearing on release if you were under the age of 21 when the crime was committed, but it's only forward-looking, the one in 2019. So in theory, this wouldn't even go into effect until the I can't do math right now. But, I mean, like, no one would be able to use this for essentially 35 more years, right?
Exactly. But under the bill that's being debated, it would more than likely apply to some number. It was an unknown number. The sponsor of the bill wasn't sure. But it certainly would apply to some people probably immediately.
Yeah. I'm curious because, you know, we hear this term a lot, sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But this would be an override to that sentence, essentially. Not everyone, of course, would get out. In fact, I imagine a lot of people wouldn't get out. But this would essentially override that phrase that we use, if you were under 21 when the crime was committed.
Yeah, in a way. I think if you were probably sentenced without the possibility of parole, I don't think those people would be eligible to get a release hearing from prison. But if you were sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole at some point, you might be able to get a hearing after 20 years sitting behind bars for the murder that you committed.
Okay, so this bill was debated. I imagine a heated one. And I could definitely see some, I could almost like picture the districts in which Democrats represent this district who did not want to jump on board. I'm sure we saw that a lot in the suburbs and some of the other areas too.
Yes, you nailed it. It was suburban Democrats and a lot of downstate Democrats as well who were just really uncomfortable with this idea. It's one of the very rare times in Springfield that I've actually seen a Democrat-sponsored bill be called for a vote and then defeated on a bipartisan basis. It got 49 votes from only Democrats. Bills need 60 to pass the House. And, you know, that means there's at least 11 Democrats who voted no on the bill. And then a whole other group, I think another 10, who just skipped the vote entirely because they didn't want to be recorded one way or another. But it's rare to see a proposal in front of the House that is unpopular with 20 Democrats in this state.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats had a great election in the suburbs in this recent municipal election, and they may have maybe some wind behind their sails, but this restorative justice stuff, while I think a lot of people would say it's important and it's important to look at, it is a little politically hairy, Ben, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, people in the suburbs, they care a lot about the issue of crime, even if crime isn't necessarily a major issue in their community. But voters are a little bit more moderate on these issues in the suburbs. They want safety. They demand safety. And, you know, I think a lot of lawmakers that represent the suburbs, they do recognize that. So they're not going to back a bill that is going to get them negative headlines, you know, every 2 years that Representative so-and-so, they voted to release convicted murderers from prison early. You know, that never plays well on a campaign ad in the fall.
No, and also, and now I'm diving into this in my head a little deeper, if I were a representative, I could see myself saying, well, I'll vote for the bill that really isn't going to come back to bite me for 40 years, right? Like the one that passed in 2019, the idea that someone could claim if they're under the age of 21 and they serve 40 years in prison, like I'm not going to be a state rep in 40 years versus one that is backwards looking. And you mentioned, Ben, like a potential headline someone might get, like, oh, they released a convicted murderer. Well, undoubtedly, someone that is released might commit another crime, maybe not a murder, I have no idea, but that could happen in someone's term. And then you could point to that person and say, this person voted to allow this person to be released and they went into this. Like, I mean, it is the immediacy of this bill, I imagine, frightened a lot of lawmakers.
Absolutely. And the other issue is the Prisoner Review Board in the state has been headlines a lot in the last few years because a various person was released by the board and then went on to commit a crime. One of the biggest examples was an 11-year-old Chicago boy was murdered by somebody like within a day of a person being released from prison under the supervision of the Prisoner Review Board. So a lot of lawmakers also just don't really trust the folks who would be making these decisions in these hearings to potentially release somebody convicted of a really heinous crime.
Ben, you did great work for us here today. Capital News Illinois does a lot of good work. Give us a quick plug for what you guys do and who should be reading what you do.
Yeah, as we were talking about, we're a nonprofit newsroom. We distribute all of our news to any organization throughout the state that wants to pick it up. So you've probably seen our stories in your local newspaper. We're completely free online, no paywall to find. So, yeah, you can find us at capitalnewsillinois.com and more than likely in your local newspaper every day.
Nonprofit, nonpartisan, and boy, oh boy, so many states have seen their coverage at their state capitals go precipitously down. And when we stop shining a light on what happens in our state capitals, that's when the rot kind of seeps in, Ben. And that's where journalism can be a huge asset for people. I know it's in a profession that isn't perfect and it's under a lot of fire now, Ben, but nonprofit, nonpartisan news coming out of our state capital is certainly a good thing.
Exactly. We need more state house reporters.
Amen. And Ben, just this will make you feel good. We got a text from the 773. Who is this? He's pretty good. That's a ringing endorsement, Ben.
I'll take it. Thank you from the 773.
Yeah, it's Ben Zielinski, spelled S-Z-A-L-I-N-S-K-I, State House reporter at Capital News, Illinois. I was telling a radio during the news break, he is really good. I hope you come on again soon. Okay, Ben?
Absolutely. Anytime, John.
That's
thank you for having
me. Great. Well, don't tell me anytime because then you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But we'll talk again soon, I promise you.